welcome back to the program. Let's go to line number two to begin the show this morning. Say good morning to the executive director at TradesNL. That's Darren King. Morning, Darren. You're on the air.
Hey, Paddy. Good morning.
Welcome back to the program. So what more do we know now about opportunities for the 16 or 17 trade organizations you represent, specifically with Beta Nord?
Well, first of all, thanks for taking my call. I appreciate the opportunity to have a few minutes. So we're engaged, I guess, in a couple of activities with the public on that, Paddy. Our primary objective, as I've said to you many times before, is to ensure maximum opportunities for the province. And that means, obviously, direct construction jobs for our skilled trades workforce throughout the province. And then the many, many spin-off benefits that come from that, of course, for the supply and service sector, and then, of course, filters down into the local communities. So, we're certainly very engaged in the file. Just to give you a quick update, we've been meeting with industry stakeholders, including Equinor themselves. We've done a letter-writing campaign to MHAs, reached out to the parties for an opportunity to present and meet with them, met with the Premier and several provincial ministers, as well as Minister O'Regan, and we're now reaching out into communities, particularly in the Cowhead, Marystown and Bull Arm areas of the province, who stand to either win considerably or lose considerably, depending on where the work goes. So our purpose at this point is to just draw attention to the issue and to try and engage people on the discussions that are currently ongoing. But specifically to the work, from our perspective, there's basically a number of categories of work. The first is the haul, which we can't do in the province because of the physical capacity required to build a vessel and to be able to put it in the water. So we understand that. Beyond that, there's the topsides, which is, in layman's terms, is like the Lego blocks that go on top of the vessel, the various components that make up the topsides. And then there's the actual hooking all of that together on the topsides, or the mating, as we call it. And then there's the commissioning and tow out, which is the testing of the vessel and towing it to sea. Our view, and we've presented this fairly strongly and clearly to the province and to others, is that other than the haul, there's nothing else that can't be done in this province if the will is there to get it done by Equinor. And I will say, Paddy, to be fair to Equinor, they're showing good leadership locally in Norway. They're doing a recent project at Johan Castberg, and we've been sharing the video on that. If you haven't seen it, by the way, I'll send it to you. But it's basically a vessel. The haul was designed outside of Norway, and the video shows the haul being towed back to Norway for local benefits for Norwegians to construct and install the topsides, the commissioning and the mating. And that's really all we're asking for is to treat Newfoundland and Labrador the same as they treat their own in Norway. So it's it's an ongoing discussion, but there are lots of things happening behind the scenes and lots of discussions, I'm sure, between government and Equinor and others. We just wanted to make sure people are aware of that and that people are aware of, the consequences, pro and con, should we get work or not get work. I will say, by the way, before I stop and let you jump in, that our meetings with the Premier and the Minister have been very positive, and we're certainly thankful so far of their approach to this.
Well, of course, there's a political victory for securing as much work as possible for the development if and when it gets its business sanctioned. But their break even, I think, was around $35 a barrel, so doesn't look like there is any reason why they won't proceed here. A couple of things. And I mean, you've been on the government side when some of these conversations have happened. I mean, like, for instance, ExxonMobil paid us a fine, I'll call it, when they did some of their work. I believe it was either in Spain or in South Korea, as opposed to do it here in this province. So what sides of hammer do both sides hold here? Because for me, Equinor holds virtually all the cards, certainly three out of the four aces. So how does it work to encourage? Because if it comes down to giving them a break, whether it be on royalties or subsidies or electricity or something, then we're kind of giving away something to get something, which might not bring us any further ahead. So how does this negotiation look? Who holds the cards?
Well, I think both sides hold the cards for sure. Obviously, the province is in a position where it wants proponents to develop the oil field, wants Equinor to proceed with the project because of the massive opportunities, not only for what I'm advocating for, but also for the royalties to the province, no question. The flip side, though, to be fair, I think, Equinor wants this project to move forward as well. I mean, the Beta Nord project, as far as oil projects go, has been shown to be a very, very positive one. And all indications we have is that Equinor probably wants this to proceed as much as we do or more. So, I think both have cards to play here, and it's a negotiation. Equinor is going to likely, as any company, want to do as much as they can elsewhere and try and reduce their risk and save money. The province's position, as I understand it, and hopefully, would be that we want as much done here as possible because it's our resource and our people should benefit. So I think both that really hold the cards here.
And I know this won't be a very valuable addition to the conversation, but in regards to hindsight, you're right, the capacity and the type of laydown yard required to do the hull work and build the ship is not here. It's just impossible given the current reality in this province. You wonder at the beginning of the oil industry and the opportunities being a coastal province like we are, access to the north and the Marine Institute and their simulators where companies all over the world are lining up to use it. Just imagine if we had to have the foresight to put that capacity in place, not just for our own offshore field, but for the world. You know, there was an opportunity lost there, and I don't know how hard anyone looked at it, but can you imagine if there wasn't even a need for a conversation to include some work in Spain, some work in Korea, some work here, some work there, when we could have really created that capacity? What an opportunity lost.
Yeah, I mean, I agree with you 100%. You know, in some respects, we're still an evolving industry, unfortunately. You know, back when we did Hibernia would have been really the time to have the foresight to start looking at that stuff. But, you know, it's never too late. And the Bay du Nord provides a good opportunity. As many of us have been talking about for years, the Bull Arm site, Marystown Shipyard, the Cowhead facility are great facilities, and we need more work in both. So, you know, this might present an opportunity to start over in some respects. Paddy, the other piece we didn't touch on, by the way, is subsea work. And that as well provides good opportunities locally. And that might provide the opportunity for longer term work for some of our facilities that might help morph into what you just described.
Yeah, because, I mean, it's not only for offshore oil either. We could have been bidding on the new Coast Guard vessels and for the shipwork being done as close as Belfast and their renowned yard. There was just always something stuck out to me that there was an opportunity lost. And that, I know that's not helping the conversation, but maybe we can spur on adding capacity versus just being content with what we have. Anything else you'd like to offer this morning, Darren?
No, look, I appreciate the opportunity. I'm actually in Placentia today for a couple of days, sorry, for the Placentia Bay showcase, talking about all kinds of things besides oil and gas. So I'll probably touch back with you later in the week, early next week, for an update.
Sounds good. Appreciate your time this morning.
Thank you very much. All the best.
You too. Bye-bye. It's Darren King, the ED at Trades NL. Okay, let's get another one before the break for sure. Let's go to line number three. Good morning, Tom. You're on the air.
Good morning, Patrick. How are you this morning?
Not too bad at all. How about you?
Not too bad. Patty, I was listening to your preamble there this morning about the potential for interest rate hikes again from the Bank of Canada. You may or may not be aware, I did a piece for the Telegram on Saturday.
Yeah, I read it.
Just for your listeners to know that I don't have a mortgage. I don't have any credit card debt or line of credit debt or any interest-bearing debt. So an interest rate hike for me benefits me directly, okay, because investments and things like that, I get a better return. However, indirectly, these interest rate hikes, of course, affect us all overall, and myself included. And I'm, for the life of me, I can't understand. Now, again, I'm not an economist, and maybe I'm just stupid, but I just don't understand how these interest rate hikes affect inflation when the people that are being affected the most are those people holding mortgages, holding lines of credit, credit card balances, and all those kind of things. The problem we have, of course, with inflation now are supply chain issues. The price of diesel fuel has gone through the roof, so naturally a lot of these prices are as a result of transportation costs, and why the government of Canada is not addressing the transportation issues instead of this 1970s policy of interest rate hikes. Completely, I just don't understand it. So maybe if there's some economist out there who could call in and talk to you and set me straight, then I'd be able to sleep a lot easier because I simply do not understand it.
Yeah, we had one of the country's most noted academics on inflation, a guy from the University of Calgary, Trevor Tome, on the show not so long ago, and I'm not going to pretend to understand all the ins and outs of inflation, but you did mention, I think, the two key drivers is the energy sector and transportation. Well, I guess net housing into that. Of course, there's lots of different moving parts here, but I don't know what the government does about the price of diesel necessarily, because all they really have is the taxation applied to fuels that they can, you know, wiggle around with or niggle around with to see if they can reduce the cost. But for folks who maybe aren't following that closely with the story, at the beginning of the year, the Bank of Canada's key interest rate, their benchmark was 0.25. It's now 3.25. There's the possibility for a half a point or three quarters of a point tomorrow. And I guess the, you know, the layman's term for how it impacts inflation is, if people's pressure to service their debt becomes more, then that takes some of the money out of the market chasing goods that are in high demand. It's the basics of it, I guess. It won't really have a big impact on your credit card, but it will have an impact on your line of credit, your mortgage, and any other loans that you have with a traditional lender. So that's absolutely going to be a big knock. It's the perfect storm, isn't it? You know, housing prices have come back to earth a little bit. Energy prices are soaring. Food prices are soaring. And now with the debt Canadians piled onto themselves, average household consumer debt in this country is in and around $22,000. So now the pressure on repaying your loan, your monthly payment, is going to really take a good knock here. So it's the perfect storm where the Bank of Canada, it's easy enough to say in hindsight, but had they not been so obstinate with having this very cheap, almost free money for so long, and of course people would be happy to throw in the fact that, you know, pandemic supports put a lot of money out into the market while the supply chains were interrupted. So more money chasing fewer goods is absolutely a contributing factor, but I don't know where that Bank of Canada number is going to go tomorrow, but I do know I have a mortgage and a line of credit, so I'm going to feel it.
Yeah, I know. And like I said, I don't have any of that stuff. I'm a lot older than you are, of course. But, you know, and I understand that the government can't control the price of diesel, but there's a lot of other things they can control, such as licensing and all of those things that go along with the cost of transportation. But what upsets me about all of this is that those other types of things that I'm talking about, other than interest rates, require a lot of thought, a lot of work, a lot of things to be done to try and address the supply chain issues, which are the big problems. And we're not doing that. We're just simply saying that, oh, yeah, okay, we'll just raise interest rates. And I think that's wrong. I really don't think that just is not going to change me, is not going to change most people. Yeah, sure, let's address new mortgages. Let's address new lines of credit, new things like this, before we address the fact of all these people that got existing debt that are now going to have to spend a lot more to service that debt. And yeah, that will reduce spending on their part. But will it really have that effect on inflation? I just don't know. So I'm calling you to say that I wish there was somebody who could really explain it to me, you know, in ways that I could understand how higher interest rates really address this problem, this particular problem, which was, I think we can agree that was mostly COVID-related, and now getting people back to work and coupled with the higher fuel prices and things. We don't need something unique to address this inflation issue.
Dr. Tom from the University of Calgary pretty much said, if I remember correctly, and I think I do, is that even these interest rate hikes, it takes a couple of years for them to have real impact in the inflation number and on the Canadian economy. So I think you're right in suggesting there's got to be other moves we can take, because that's the big hammer. You know, and there's a recession looming. I mean, it looks very much like it. I haven't seen one economist of it worth their salt not express that worry that it is coming. And so if it is, then the interest rate hike is going to make it even more difficult for people carrying consumer debt low to the levels that they are. I mean, the last number I saw is Canadians on average, adults, are paying out about $1.79 in servicing their debt with every dollar they earn. That's unsustainable. Like, that doesn't, the math does not work. Tom, I'll see if I can get someone on who knows much more about it than I do to speak to us like we're all 18. You know, break it down so I can wrap my mind around it.
That's what I want, exactly. And thank you for taking my call. I really appreciate it, and I will look forward. Unfortunately, I didn't hear that gentleman you referred to, but I'll try and pay more attention here lately and see if I can hear somebody doing exactly what you say. And as a final note, they're finally paving a road here in front of my house in Kilbride. So that's a big plus.
Well, congratulations on the new blacktop being laid down, and now hopefully you've learned your lesson by missing even a second of the show, Tom.
I will. Thanks. Thank you.
Okay, buddy.
Okay, bye-bye.
Bye-bye. All right, let's get to the break. When we come back, we're going to talk about farming out in Clarenville, then the work of the seniors advocate, and Charlie wants to talk about getting his hair done. Don't go away.